was April 1997, and the New South Wales Rugby League decided to finally expand the game beyond the Sydney region further, this time accepting bids from the Broncos and Newcastle. But there was one more interesting puzzle piece. The New South Wales Rugby League wanted to attack a new area, an area that had only seen success through an entrepreneur's expansive bid for the VFL, the Gold Coast. The success of the Brisbane Bears on the Gold Coast panicked league bosses to put a team up there. Except there was a problem. The team was based in Tweed Heads, and money quickly ran out. The Gold Coast has always been an area where teams go to die. But why is that the case? Find out on League Legacy, Season 2, Episode 3, The Gold Coast, Trouble in Paradise. Welcome, everyone, to the second season of League Legacy, Episode 3, where we're basically looking at how the Gold Coast is a purgatory for not just rugby league, but for all sports. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Reece Sullivan. Reece, thanks for coming on the program.
No worries. Thanks for having me. And, of course, being the Broncos fan on the podcast, I've definitely got some choice words to say about the Gold Coast, especially the current iteration of them.
Well, particularly in the last few years in terms of players they've taken. But on the program, we're going to be looking at how the Gold Coast became a battle for both the VFL and the New South Wales Rugby League, how a rush to judgment basically screwed this team from the get-go. We look at the most flamboyant owner in rugby league history, Jeff Muller, as well as come up with the theory on why teams fail on the Gold Coast. So, Reece, I think we're ready to get into this one.
Sounds good to me. I can't wait.
So basically where this story starts is it doesn't actually start with rugby league at all. It starts with the VFL back in 1986. And Alan Bond, before he went bankrupt and bought Channel 9 for $1 billion, wanted to build a team, wanted to move Richmond to Brisbane. And that plan fell through.
Obviously, with Richmond having been, you know, one of the most dominant teams of the last decade in the AFL while still playing in Victoria. Obviously, we know that fell through.
I agree. But so then Christopher Skase saw this opportunity, and this is before he fled to Mallorca and before he left $1 billion worth of bankruptcy on the table. So he brought the Brisbane Bears, and this is for his Quintex company at the time, and he started playing out of Carrara, and they were drawing okay crowds, you know, nothing spectacular. Their first season averaged 8,000, but they ended up buying the biggest name in AFL in Warwick Capper. Now, Warwick Capper was the major draw card for the Swans, and the New South Wales Rugby League really saw a battle, particularly in Sydney, going up against the Swans because they were only two games shy of the grand final in 1987, and the Sydney crowds, the comparison to the AFL crowds, the Swans were outdrawing five games in Sydney.
But that's so, that generally, you know, you can put that down to the fact that there was one Sydney AFL team versus what was it at the time, like seven Sydney NRL teams?
We had, I think it was a 12-team comp, and you had Canberra and Illawarra were the only non-two.
Yeah, but
so
then
it's
even,
technically 10 teams.
Even excluding the Western Sydney team, so the Magpies, the Panthers, the Eels and the Bulldogs. That's still
that's a fair point.
That's still a lot of teams based in just that Sydney region that are competing with the Swans.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. But the point is, there is a niche market on the Gold Coast. I mean, look at it: beaches, sunny weather, everything's there for them. But the Broncos' bid was just accepted by the league. I think the bid from the Knights was accepted earlier than that. So Ken Arfison and his cronies in Sydney had a panic. And they go, oh, they could do pretty well on the Gold Coast. We need to put a team there. But hang on a moment. There's a problem there. You give them the name Gold Coast, but you base them out of Tweed Heads.
It's a
the logic.
That's basically a summary of the New South Wales Rugby League. We want to keep it all based in New South Wales.
But we'll just throw the Gold Coast name in there for a bit of fun.
Yeah.
That's basically what we discovered at the time. So they basically got founded in June 1987. And you know, only really had 8 or 10 weeks to put a team together ready to go for preseason. And on paper, you pick up some good names. You pick up the likes of Ron Gibbs, who is a story in himself. Chris Close, Tony Rampling, Rob Simpkins. And you've got some guys now, like Mike Eden as well. All past your prime, decent-ish players.
There were. Amazingly, though, none of the players in Gold Coast's first season were over the age of 30.
Believe it or not.
So you say,
yes.
You say past their prime, but they had no one over 30. The problem is everyone they bought just absolutely fell off.
Chris Close was one in particular. He was coming off a grand final in Manly. Ron Gibbs was possibly in that career best form category. But the story with Ron Gibbs is an interesting one. So they brought him out and they let him have a pick of a few blocks of land. And I remember, because I was listening to this on another podcast, they picked out a land for him and he brought it. And then the Gold Coast refused to give him what was paid for.
Oh, geez.
God. Like, isn't that the point? You're supposed to get what you get.
I mean, if someone was to do that in the modern
today,
day, you'd have fans of the other 15 clubs screaming that they should be allowed to walk out.
Yeah. So basically, due to a clause in Brisbane's license, only one team could play in that exclusive Southeast Queensland market. So that's why they ended up going to Tweed Heads. And they had, where they played their games at Chris Cunningham Field, a very lucrative casino behind them called Seagulls, which we'll get to in a moment because that plays a very important role. But the Gold Coast and Group 18 were provided a nursery of young players, which the club was able to draw on for recruitment. So basically you had players debut like Troy McCarthy, Mark G, Michael Searle, who ended up running the second iteration of the Titans, the Gold Coast, sorry, and that's about it. Troy McCarthy only got in because his dad was the coach.
I just noticed something. I'm looking through the Rugby League Project page for the Gold Coast Tweed Giants in their 98 season. And
yep.
They have David Chapman as 15 years old in 1988.
God. He must have got a Joseph Sawali-esque clearance to play.
Wait. I gotta check this. Hang on a second. Surely. Hang on a second. Youngest NRL players.
Here we go. I haven't seen this before.
There is no way. Right?
That has to be a typo.
List of National Rugby League records.
This has to be a title. I haven't seen this before.
Would it be any? Because they have his birthday date as 1973 too, so it makes sense.
It does make sense. There has to be a typo.
Here we go, youngest players. He's not on there. And the last player on the list is Adam Ritson, 16 years, 303 days. So, yeah, it has to be a typo.
Wow. If that's the case,
Andrew Ferguson, no Andrew standards. Ferguson, pick up your game, mate. Seriously.
We can't afford to give him too much slack. So basically, other people recruited to be a part of this were John Sattler, Peter Gallagher, Bob Hagen, and Doug Ryan. They missed out on the initial Brisbane bid. But you had some quality coaching. Like Bob McCarthy is your coach. Graham Langlands is a team manager and Ken Irvine is sprint coach. On paper, what can go wrong?
You know,
a whole
you
lot.
Know, you say that, but you have to remember rugby league is played on the field and not inside the pages of a big league.
Good point. But when you look at their first few games, you go, oh, we led 10-0 against the Bulldogs, but then you're letting 21 straight points. You drew with Illawarra, some mediocre crowds and some disappointing footy, led the team to start 0-8-1. with the most disappointing, probably losing 20-0 to eventual Wooden Spooners Wests at home in front of 4,000 people.
Yeah. That's
we're repeating ourselves a bit here, aren't we?
We definitely are, you know. Like, look, the first few games, obviously, you know, you can make excuses.
There was a bit of wet weather.
You can make excuses with the first few games because they went through a lot of good teams, you know. Obviously, they had. Obviously, they did go through the Trans Lounge and Easts, but other than that, there were some really good teams of that era. But to lose 20-0 to the Magpies?
That was their first win of the season, I might add.
It's bad. And the fact that they only did it in front of 4,000 fans too is really a bit of a, you know, bit of a spoiler alert for how the club would be.
Yep, 100%. But their biggest shake-up on the league scene happened to be round 10 when they pulled off possibly the upset of the Winfield Cup era, beating big brother the Broncos at Seagull Stadium in front of, holy shit, they actually drew a crowd, 15,000.
But, I mean, I feel like that's sort of a Tampa Bay Rays crowd. You know, not everyone's coming there to watch the Giants play. A lot of them are coming there to watch the Broncos play.
You look at that's a common trend now in rugby league. Oh, you go watch let's just pick out, you watch the Bulldogs v Penrith. Oh, what's going on? Watch Penrith play. We don't want to watch the Bulldogs play. They probably won't score.
I mean, why do you think the Panthers versus Raiders game was a packed house? People were true. Also there, in trouble for that, not too. Just to watch the Panthers play, but also to watch the Raiders play.
Good point. But basically, the Gold Coast arrived as a league team, beating big brother the Broncos 25-22 in front of a good crowd. They had three players simbing throughout the match. And still end up winning. I think that was a massive all-in from memory. But eventually, you know, things went bad.
I mean, let's be fair. They started the season 0-9. Things were already bad.
Yeah. Major signing Tony Rampling only played one game all season, and that was the first game. Ron Gibbs only played 14 games.
So as a result, you had a lot of guys, you know, like Scott Meany, Ben Gonzalez, Joe Vitanza, you know, all these guys who otherwise probably wouldn't have gone to run in first grade. They're having to play in the starting team now.
Yeah, 100%. But however, they did play one player that actually showed a bit of class, Jeff Bagnall. He was a Brisbane Norths player who played in the Brisbane League, which, by the way, the Brisbane League is now decimated for thanks to the Broncos and Gold Coast
Goes formally defunct in the next couple of years and just becomes the feeder league, the Queensland Cup that we know today.
Exactly. But Jeff Bagnall handled the transition to big-time footy. He was an architect of a victory over the Giants. Not the Giants, they beat themselves plenty of times. But they beat the Knights. They beat the Knights 9-0 in their only victory away from Seagull Stadium all season. So they're like the Hunter Mariners at this point. They can't win it away from home.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong, but...
But the financial future of the club was already in jeopardy. But as I mentioned, having your home games right next to a casino is a good thing. Because in February the next year, the Giants were taken over by the Seagulls Leagues Club, securing their financial future.
Yeah, I mean...
Which is good to see.
I mean, I'm sure Tigers fans are a bit iffy about Leagues Clubs controlling the team's future, but... Exactly. But, you know, for the time, you know, long time, Queensland Rugby League had been lagging behind New South Wales because of the fact they couldn't have Leagues Clubs. The Leagues Clubs didn't have pokies, which means they couldn't bankroll the teams, which meant the best Queensland players were being offered more money to go play in New South Wales and even play for New South Wales, given the old interstate rules.
Exactly right. But I think, too, you look at cases where the QRL did hold firm. It wasn't for the lower-ranked players. It was for guys like Lewis, Miles. They tried to hold firm on Mal Meninga, but Don Ferner brought him in. They also tried to hold firm on Gary Belcher. They did hold firm on Peter Jackson when I discussed that in our Roosters case study. It's kind of just Ron McAuliffe, before his passing, just wanted to keep his best players. But after McAuliffe left and after he passed away, all those players were just going down to Sydney.
The only genuinely loyal Queensland player of that time was Wally Lewis.
After being offloaded.
I mean, Wally Lewis, even after he ended up getting cut by Brisbane, he still went to play for a Queensland side in the bloody Gold Coast.
that's a chapter
I mean,
itself.
I mean, if I'm in Wally Lewis's case, all due respect to the team, but I would have just retired.
I think a lot of us would have retired if we got offered to play for the Gold Coast. But not one grand final front row, which we'll touch on in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
1989. He went to the Gold Coast for a completely different reason, as you'll find out.
Oh, he joined the Kevin Proctor Club with that move.
Yeah. So 1989 came along. They brought all their players back, but they picked up the best player in the transfer window in Bob Linder. And they also got Graeme Stedman, who was the incumbent British fullback. But Bob Linder wrote his name in the history books after becoming the club's first State of Origin representative when he played for Queensland in Game 1 and Game 2. But as did everyone in Queensland in Game 2 of 89, he got injured and he only played 10 games and then left the club. The Giants won 7 games and drew 1 in 89, which is, and I quote from my research, a great improvement on the first season.
I mean, you're not wrong.
They went on a 3-game winning streak. They beat Newcastle, North.
4-game winless streak if you include the draw against West in round 11.
Yep, that's a good point. They ended up in round 21 nearly denying Cronulla a place in the top 5 by securing an upset win at Seagull Stadium. But again, looking through my research, they didn't get an away victory in 89. Or they did against Illawarra, but they were dead last.
Yeah, everyone beat Illawarra that year.
Yep. But that Cronulla game really set the toughness in catcher and some good core players like Mark Ross, Mark G would be there for a while. Peter Benson was a new recruit from Brisbane. Greg Whitbread would always be around the club for a few years afterwards. But it's just interesting to note how it's changed.
What's
so
even weirder about the season is the captain situation. Billy Johnson started the season, you know, the hooker.
Played every game.
Yeah.
Played every game.
Yeah, but he wasn't the captain every game. So he started the season as captain. Then in round 3, Ron Gibbs took over.
Round 4, because the round 3 game was postponed.
Oh, round 4, sorry. I believe Johnson, that was the game Johnson missed. Yes, it was. So Johnson comes back in, but then round 9, he is the captain. Hang on a second, am I looking at the wrong round? No, he's the captain, but Rugby League Project has listed as Bob Lindner being the captain. So that's weird.
Yeah. Anything to keep your star players happy.
Round 11, he was in the team, but Bob Lindner was the captain in that game. And then all of a sudden, Lindner gets hurt. So instead of going back to Johnston, they give the captaincy to Ron Gibbs for every game except that round 21 game against Cronulla, where Gibbs is still in the 13. He's playing a lock. But for some reason, they gave the captaincy back to Johnston.
I guess they had to make up for fucking up the development.
No, but also shout out Ron Gibbs. You mentioned that Linda was their first Origin representative. That same year, Gibbs did play for New South Wales Country. So I guess that's worth 2 brownie points.
In respect. The experience of players like that, Ron Gibbs, Chris Close, Billy Johnston, proved invaluable for the club in what was a very good season. And in the Seagulls era, was the best until the competition split. So well done. Hometown attendances improved despite very poor weather. The overall worrying aspect for the club overall is that the team could only score 34 tries, 3 fewer than the Defoe season, but also showed great improvement, conceding 101 less points.
Just a reminder, no one in the team scored more than 7 tries that season.
Who was the leading try scorer?
It was Peter Benson, the 22-year-old, I assume, winger? Winger fullback.
Okay, moving on. 1990 now, they get some more experienced names. They get likes of Phil Daly, Brett French, Rob Grogan, who was played in the Queensland League, Clinton Moore, Dean Sampson from England, Paul Shaw. Manly fans have been begging me to talk about Paul Shaw for a while. Come on the field, about 10, 15 minutes to go, make an impact, score a couple of tries. Good player, Paul Shaw.
Except for when he was on the Gold Coast.
Exactly. And this is the purgatory thing I'm trying to get across in this program. So basically, 1990 was an inevitable shit show. They were in dead last for all but up until round 18 when an upset win over South Sydney in front of 3,000 people. And then they beat St. George the next week at home, secured their 15th place finish. I think I can't describe how shit the Gold Coast were.
Let's look at some of these score lines. I mean, what, a 30-8 loss to the Bulldogs, you know, 2 years removed from their premiership. You know, that's not the best thing in the world.
They did start the season.
27-4 loss to the Bears. 29-14 loss to the Magpies. 34-0 loss to the Seagulls. 46-2 loss to the Tigers. 40-0 loss to the Eels with Peter Sterling playing in a bloody sling, pretty much, at that point.
Yep, Parramatta on the decline. That's disappointing.
I mean, you can say, oh, they're on the improvement. That's basically looking at, you know, the Sharks losing all these games and saying, oh, the teams they're losing to aren't that bad.
Just like the current era at the moment.
Exactly.
John Morris got sacked. But again, the biggest news in the history of the Gold Coast followed the Seagulls' most traumatic year in the Premiership, and that was they got King Wally. After a falling out at the Broncos, this news became upon a season where the club was expected to show improvement. I talked about the buying spree, but it started well, technically. They won round 4 over Souths 27-14, but it was their last victory in 3 months. They also had a club record victory in that Souths game I mentioned, but Bob McCarthy dealt with speculation on his future for most of the season. Although it wasn't until the final match. After the final match, he was told his services are no longer required, replaced by former Canterbury first grade coach Malcolm Clift.
Yuck.
But the player draft did not help them at all. They lost Ron Gibbs to West. Billy Johnston retired because he was sick and not being captain for the week. And no one scored more than 7 tries in a season. It was a three-way tie between Mark Ross, Clinton Moore, and Brett French. The Seagulls supporters somehow improved. Am I reading this right? They somehow improved to 6,625.
Yes. And they had 12,000 pack in for that 46-2 loss to the Tigers. Was Ellery Handley playing or something?
I think Andy Courier might have been playing. Here's their team. Gary Jack, Clint Robinson, James Grant, Tim Brasher, Steve O'Brien, Damien McGarry, Michael Neal, Steve Roach, Ben Elias, not trying to embarrass the bloke, Steve Edmed, Paul Surinan, Gary McFarlane.
Look, I'm sorry. But how did Gold Coast manage to convince 12,000 people to come and watch Michael Neal play a game of rugby league?
Not trying to embarrass the bloke. Steve Edmed, I'm so sorry that we had to bring
also,
this up.
Also, just quickly, shout out to the Tigers halves. Michael Neal, a hat trick. Damien McGarry, 2 tries. Don't see that very often from a halves partnership, but yeah, shout out to them.
Nope.
Full credit to the lads.
Shout out to them indeed. But now we move on. Full credit. Say that again. Round 1991 time now. Let's take a look at see who they brought in. They brought in, oh God, they have gone for a retread. Larry Corowa.
Oh God.
You can tell you're desperate when you're playing, no disrespect to the bloke because it was a try-scoring wizard, but
at 34. Tolawa,
the Mind bloke, you. That was going to be my next question. How old was he?
I mean.
And how much money in brown paper bags did Wally
He hadn't played rugby league between, oh, first grade rugby league between 1983 and 1991. And all of a sudden, he's up here playing two games. Was it two games? Yeah, two games.
I think it was two or three.
For Gold Coast. And he bloody managed to score a try. Against Souths. First game back after, what, 8 years without playing first grade rugby league. And he goes over for a try in the 34-18 thumping against South Sydney.
He did have a bludger of a game.
He did, indeed.
Fullback. But they did manage to do something that was very rare in this period. They went to Newcastle and won. 16-12, thanks to English import Darryl Powell, the Brett Ross and Brett Roll show in the halves. This is without Wally Lewis too. But the only sour note on this win was Danny Peacock dislocating his hip. And Danny Peacock was a good player.
You're not wrong. I mean, he was a great player.
He was one of their best in this shit.
I mean, he was a great, great player. He ended up, we'll get on to it later, his 1995 season. Because that was, like, genuinely elite. But, first season in, and he dislocates his hip. First season at the Gold Coast, I meant.
Because he came over from...
Because he'd been with West a couple of years
ago. Yeah. Okay. While the arrival on Wally Lewis failed to bring off on-field results because they only won two games all year, crowds rose 29% at Seagull Stadium and 36% overall. He played only 14 of 22 games while captaining Queensland to a 2-1 series win, what would be his final Origin series. Two of their better performances came against some leading players, against the Canberra Raiders. In round 4 at Bruce Stadium, they only went down 20-18 to the Raiders, whilst in round 19 at Seagulls, they led 10-8 with only 10 to go before letting Mal Meninga score late to win the game. So you don't look at that and you go, oh, we didn't go too badly. But then you look at some other games, you lose 30-4 to the Roosters, who are in their transit lounge phase, 46-4 to Illawarra. Where's another blowout? 42-22 to Parramatta.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ouch. But anyway, moving on to possibly my favourite part of this podcast now. 1992. Wally Lewis had taken over as captain coach and brought in some good players. Peter Gill, Steve Jackson, Dale Shearer, Paul Martin, Mike McLean, and Brent Todd.
Here we go. AJ, just saying, AJ so has been waiting for this moment for about 3 months.
I was going to play this when we did the Gold Coast thing, but this is Brett Todd's reaction to when he signed with the Gold Coast. The reason I wanted to come to the Gold Coast was because the Sheilas are good looking and I want to.
That is typical rugby league.
Well, Brent Todd would have had a good chance to do that because he was sent off in round 3.
We all know he went for an early shower, but the question is, who was he showering with?
I had to mention that. But basically, Brent Todd, was he suspended for that?
Got 4 games. I'm sure that's the happiest the bloke's ever been to get a 4-week suspension.
But let's be real. And to make things even worse for the Gold Coast is those 2 points they won in that game against Illawarra got taken off.
What for?
They used 5 replacements. Dear. They committed the cardinal sin in rugby league because I think one was a head bin and they thought they could get away with it.
Don't try it.
Which they did. I think Auckland did something in 1995 as well.
Yeah. You're 100% right. And I think West did it as well in 96. Yeah.
it was one of the years. Balmain.
It happened to a lot of teams as well. But it was a stupid, stupid rule, I'm going to say.
Yeah, it was very unique. But those 2 points ended up robbing them of not getting the wooden spoon. But they ended up beating some good teams. They pulled off an upset over Canberra. And by the way, Canberra at this point was completely fucked after they breached the salary cap. But they had a spine of Dale McDonald, Mal Meninga, Phil Blake and Steve Walters playing.
Very interesting combinations.
Without Brent Todd in the side even for the Gold Coast because he was still on his 3 week stand. But they ended up winning 2 games in Sydney. They beat South Sydney 20-6 and Balmain 26-14. But their last game was a special one because Wally Lewis went out a hero, scoring a try in his last match against Penrith. Now, we touched on this game from a Penrith perspective, obviously, because that's what we did in our whole Penrith episode. But it was a good way for Wally to go out as a player.
It was. And, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, he did not have, you know, you look at people who say, oh, you know, Wally Lewis is the greatest player of all time. His NRL accolades weren't, you know, weren't there in terms of everything, you know?
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you know,
I agree.
The way Wally Lewis finished up his career, even if it wasn't in the best team ever, you know, even if he didn't go out in the blaze of glory like everyone wanted him to, he still had so much influence on that Gold Coast side. That's exactly how he would have wanted to go out.
So let's go back through. Now, 1993 saw them win their third consecutive wooden spoon. The side came away with a single victory over a Newcastle side, 22-6, which was Andrew Johns' debut. So well done, Joey. Gold Coast was fined $50,000 for exceeding their 1992 salary cap.
How do you be over the cap and still finish 1-21?
No, this was the previous season when they had Brent Todd fucking everyone.
Sorry, Gold Coast fans. Don't forget Brent Todd still played 18 games this season and got a recall into the New Zealand Test side.
Again, how did they spend that much on prostitutes for Brett Todd?
I think they just thought they could take some of Wally Lewis's money and get away with it.
True. But again, in fighting between Coach Wally Lewis and management, referring to tear the club apart, but not like what we're about to discuss now with Jeff Muller. The end result saw football manager Greg Bedaria sacked, Wally Lewis resigned, and many of the club's top players, including Brent Todd and his 50 prostitutes, Jason Everington, Paul Martins, Craig Weston, and Scott Sattler leaving. 1994 now. I'm going to go through this a bit quickly. There was the modest improvement for the Seagulls. They won 4 more games, drew a game, and this is where the whole Gold Coast picture begins to come into it. They took a round 2 1994 game to Carrara against the Broncos, the previous season's premiers, and they drew 22,000. And I get you playing the Broncos. That's totally understandable. And if they were playing a lesser team, it would have been a worse crowd. But it just shows that something's there on the Gold Coast. If you play a team in its specific area, you're going to draw a crowd eventually.
Yeah, I mean, again, obviously it's the Broncos. The Broncos are a major attraction everywhere they go. Everywhere they go. You could probably play a game, Brisbane versus anyone,
in Chernobyl,
in the middle of Mars, and you'd still draw 4,000 people.
I mean, not on their 2020.
No, even on the 2024. Let's be real. Have you seen how many people have been coming to Suncorp this season?
That's because they've been drowned out.
Compare this to the teams, to the amount of people that have been going to, like, you know, the Tigers games or the Cowboys games. I mean, like, what's the Broncos'
but anyway,
average attendance so far this season? 25,000.
Let's have a look. Wow, that's pretty impressive. And look at Manly's average attendance.
This is going to be fun. Manly. Pardon?
Have you just looked at it?
I'm checking it now.
Have you just seen it?
Checking it now. Let's see here. the Manly Warringah Sea Eagles, 2021 average attendance is 4,000. Oh, God.
Anyway, back on track, back on track. So this Gold Coast team ended up playing a bit well. They came 15th, but still these signs of improvement are there. But now we're on to 1995, and our favourite topic is here, Super League. The club's top performer of the whole season was a reserve grade side coached by Phil Economides, who we'll hear from later, and they made it to the preliminary final, which is pretty good. Individually, there's some notable performances, which Reece touched on Danny Peacock, but I want to touch on Ben Eichen. He was selected to play for Queensland after a handful of first grade games, became the youngest player in history to be selected for Origin football.
Please don't. We've all heard a million times the Paul Vaughan story. Okay, good. It is such an overused story. It's a great story, but it's so overused.
Yeah. Some of the stories we told in our Super League one are underrated, like Chris Anderson, Jared McCracken story. However, sadly for the Seagulls, both Eichen and Peacock departed. Eichen to play for North Sydney and Peacock went to South Queensland, yep. I believe. Other notable departures were Craig Coleman and Peter Gill, who both signed deals to play for Murdoch's shit inversion of sport. With the Super League war in full flight, the Seagulls Leagues Club pulled out their support and was closed at the end of the season. The Seagulls license was purchased by local property millionaire and entrepreneur Jeff Muller.
Yep, so
Reece, it's all yours.
We don't know too much about Jeff Muller, but what we know was he was eccentric. He purchased the license from what was the now defunct Seagulls Club, and he rebranded the team as the Gold Coast Gladiators. Well, of course, there was a problem. AJ, you talk us through that quickly.
So basically, what happened was the lawyers acting for the Gladiators TV program. Basically, Gladiators on a Saturday night was huge. Basically, how can I compare it today? It's like that Ultimate Tag show, but so much better. That's the way I could put it. And it's basically TV's version of Maths today. It was huge. So the lawyers acting for that program wrote to Jeff Muller, claiming the rights over the name and demanding that the club should find a new name.
bit rough, but I mean,
imagine being told what to do by lawyers acting on behalf of a TV program.
Not a happy scene, I'm going to say. But so the Gladiators managed to hire Phil Economides to be their coach. He went on to be the Dallin Coach of the Year.
He's all right.
So he's definitely all right. Yep, he's definitely all
in
right.
97.
Yeah. They based themselves at Carrara. So for the first time ever, we had a rugby league team actually based on the Gold Coast. Fire away.
I've got a story about Carrara, actually. I might just jump in here. So basically, Christopher Skase, Brisbane Bears were going to be gangbusters at the time. So he decided to pay $6 million for floodlights. The only problem was the money was never actually paid. So basically, they with the collapse of Skase's company, Quintex, he fled to Spain, obviously, and the cost of the floodlights continued to be unpaid. Liquidators tried to extract money from the Gold Coast City Council for the lights, but after an unsuccessful trial, it was cheaper to leave the floodlights in place.
Oh, God.
Imagine being that stupid to, first of all, not pay for it.
Oh, God. That is a summary of Gold Coast sports in general. Yeah.
We'll
sure.
get on
but,
to that at the end of
So,
the
anyway, episode. Gold Coast come out and 1995 or 96, sorry. Early 96, the preseason Early tournament 96. Is the Plate Trophy World Sevens, or World Sevens rather. Gold Coast go on to win the Plate
one.
Trophy, which I believe was, what was it, like fifth or something?
So basically, you know how rugby sevens trophies
yeah.
work now? You have a plate, a shield.
Yeah, so it would be like fifth or something. Like so that. It's essentially worthless, but it's the only trophy Gold Coast still to this day have in their cabinet. So it's worth something. It's worth something. They're getting ready to start the season, but then just before the season starts, the ARL revokes Muller's license. Now, I have a theory for why they did this. I reckon...
Why?
Muller was planning to jump ship to the Super League. Obviously, like, all the Super League, you know, 1995 was sort of set up already. They had the 8 teams that would go on to form the crux of the Super League. I think they'd already announced that they were having the Hunt team. So they didn't have Adelaide.
Newcastle.
I reckon Gold Coast would have become that 10th team, and it would have forced the ARL into a tricky situation where they either have to cut a team heading into the Super League, or they have an 11-team comp, or they add a team, which I'm sure if you had suggested that to a couple of ARL head honchos at the time, they probably would have dropped dead on the spot.
Well, it's interesting. One of Jeff Muller's people says, Douglas Danes, the council chief executive officer, said, "You're always keen to see a Premier Rugby League team based at Carrara, whether it's an ARL team or a Super League side." That was from the council's chief executive officer at Carrara. Super League side is the key word.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 100% convinced that if the Gold Coast Gladiators had stayed in the ARL, they would have signed with the Super League, and it would have left the ARL in a bad spot. That's why they revoked the license, so that way they could have this 12-team competition of already established teams.
100%. And then they, so basically the license was taken over by Tom Bellew, and Paul Broughton, who's still treated as a king on the Gold Coast today, was essentially a brand new operation.
I'll tell you what, they were named. We can sit here and talk about the Chargers, you know, the fact that we would have rather had the Gladiators and it would have made them more interesting and the Gladiators were unfairly taken away, all that. But the Chargers had some damn good jerseys, so.
They were designed by Jeff Muller's
very,
wife, Lynn.
Very ironic, but
they decided to keep it because they were that poor financially. They couldn't be bothered, you know.
Look, at the end of the day, it wasn't the prettiest jersey in the world, but it was unique. And it stood out among all the other basic jerseys. And that's, you know, the draw card of it. Yeah.
100%. But quickly moving through, they finished 18th, which isn't bad, but they pulled off an upset over the $9 million team, sorry, Parramatta, 27-14. And as we went through Super League, they basically brought any good player that Parramatta...
Parra tried to build a super team.
...that Super League didn't want. So they started the season after 6 rounds just outside the top 8. However, sustaining a high-level performance came difficult, and they came back to bottom of the field. Anyway, Lee Odenryan set a new club record for most tries in a season after Danny Peacock.
Almost forgot Danny Peacock had that incredible 95 season.
But moving on, so as we all know, the comp split in half, and the Gold Coast actually made a final series with a less than 500.
Not just that, they won a finals game with a less than 500 record.
Against Illawarra. Yes, they did. But Wes Paddon was possibly their best player. Scored 12 tries, kicked the field goal. Crowds were up 24%. But I think what went wrong is they were going to have a merger with South Queensland. They were aborted late in the year because they saw how financially shit they were. And then abandoned, and they thought, oh, we could go on our own here. And basically, they were closed off at the end of 98 after they came second last. But they were the only club
Wait, really?
To ever make a profit out of the Super League War. Yeah, I remember I was listening to Fergo and the Freaks podcast. They were the only club to ever make a profit. So they ended up, once they disbanded, they ended up giving the profits to all the other clubs. I think the last club they gave it to
The Gold Coast Newcastle rivalries. Not something we think of in rugby league, but apparently exists.
But basically, that concludes this part of it. But my favourite quote from Jeff Muller's era in rugby league is this. It comes from this. Quote of the week. I want blokes like Martin Beller and Ellery Hanley, not washed up has-beens. God.
I mean, well, not going to lie. You'd think the Gold Coast, in theory, would be able to sign any player they want. Just because it would be so attractive to live on the Gold Coast. But in reality, it hasn't always been that cut and dry. Because I feel as though sometimes you go to live on the Gold Coast and you probably live a little too much.
100%. But basically, now it's time. So basically, after the club disbanded, they ended up going and thinking about a plan for the next few years. So then they went and got the Titans, which formed in 2007. And they've been going.
It's worth noting. It's worth noting between the disbanding of the Chargers and the creation of the Titans, there were only three games at Carrara. So Brisbane beating the Warriors in 2001.
That has something to do with QE2.
Yep, exactly. And then the Bulldogs took two home games up in 05 and 06 just to gauge, for the NRL to gauge if it was worth putting a Gold Coast team up there. In the first one, the Cowboys beat them 48-12. And then in the second one, they beat the Cowboys 20-12.
Close games. But that Bulldogs-Cowboys game, that would always be the first or second game in when they used to take the double headers at Suncorp.
From but usually was wasn't no yeah you're right it would be a Bulldogs home game.
That would have been the Bulldogs home game, but until then, the Gold Coast is essentially a black hole for sports. You have the Gold Coast Suns, who in the AFL, who ended up but taking
not overly. They didn't come in until later.
2011, yeah, but Gold Coast started at Carrara in 2007 until Cbus got built.
Then you also had the famous Gold Coast United, which then came in around the same time as the Titans did.
Clive Palmer giving a 16-year-old Vanuatu in his first start.
He was more eccentric than Jeff Muller was. I mean, and then at the end of the day, they
got a bit.
You know, the A-League explicitly warns them, do not use a Clive Palmer-owned company as your major sponsor. So what do? The very next week? Exactly.
There you go. Bring him in. They brought some good names, though. Jason Kalina, Shane Smeltz, Michael Thwaite.
Yeah, they were a good, decent team.
And then they sacked Mion Meyerberg for appointing a teenager as captain. Because he objected. But basketball is not observed either. You had the Gold Coast Rollers. They folded. Then you had the Gold Coast Blaze. Then they folded. Then you had the Daiko Dolphins in the Australian Baseball League that went to Palm Meadows. And then they got folded. And then you also have the
VH Supercars. There is a long line of failings on the Gold Coast.
But why is it the case? That's the question we're going to try and solve.
Everyone's going to turn around and say, oh, why is that the fact that people have to go live on the Gold Coast. You know, you have all these distractions, all the Sheilas, as Brent Todd put it. I just have a different reason. There is too much pressure placed on expansion teams in the 21st century. Just so much pressure to come in and do well.
Even before that.
Like, you look at teams, you know, in America, you know, you had the Vegas Golden Knights, which went on to make the Stanley Cup Finals in their first year of existence. But then on the other end of the scale, you had the Texans, who were one of the worst teams in the league, had their quarterback break a record for most times sacked in a season, and it took them years to build up. And that's generally what happens with expansion teams. But exactly. But the perception is, if you're not doing well within, you know, 2-3 years, then there's something wrong. Everyone thinks these rebuilds should only take 2 or 3 years and you should be back in finals contention. In reality, they could take 5 to 7 or even longer than that. But people just aren't patient.
They just want it straight away and they want that. Oh, yeah, we're going to win straight away. That's the mentality. But I think what people don't know is they just expect everything to happen, and then when it doesn't, it turns into poor carriage.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely not wrong.
But I just think I've got a theory here as well. I think when you look at the Gold Coast and you look at the lifestyle there as well, which we were touching on before, I just think that the players that they purchase don't fit the lifestyle. Like, you had players that did fit the lifestyle, like Brent Todd, but you got players there that some of them were shy, naive, and then they got involved in stuff. Like a Bo Falloon, for instance. He got involved with that drug smuggling thingy, and it just went pear-shaped for him. But I think for the game to succeed on the Gold Coast, for any code to succeed on the Gold Coast, you need to attract the fans in. Like the Titans are doing at the moment, they just got two of the best young back rows in the game. And they're flying now. Their attendances are pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Fafita and Fasua Maliwili.
And they're proving it. I mean, this isn't a situation like where they signed guys like David Taylor, Kevin Proctor, all those guys who they thought would come in and make a difference for them straight away, and they just didn't. Proctor's improved over time, but he didn't come in straight away.
Proctor's improved over time.
But now, Fafita and Fasua Maliwili are genuine. So,
you're right. And they've got a good core of players that they've brought in over time. Like Jamal Fogarty's starting to come of age with his performances. Mo Fodawaka as well. They've only used 19 players this year, which is a testament to how good they are.
If there's any chance to put away the Gold Coast curse, these next couple of seasons are probably the best that you might ever get. It's going to be fun.
But I think it will be fun. We'll be watching with keen interest on how it goes. But anyway, my friend, that's going to do it for us here at League Legacy. Sorry about the delay in not doing an episode last month. Got a bit sidetracked with school. But we'll be back
this
next
will be,
month.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun.
And considering,
that'll be very
considering
fun.
Of what's happened in the last few weeks,
so
this story is going to be
a
whole lot
of fun. What are we basing the Cronulla one off? Are we going all 50 years until they won the comp? Or... Have they rebuilt the club just to burn it back down?
That'll take us a full hour. Yep.
It's always been great, AJ.
It's
always been great.
Thanks for coming on the program.
See you guys.
For all of us here at League Legacy, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.
Too easy, man. Have fun.
And we'll cut there.